views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Greetings, 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 everyone. This is D, and we have Paradox on the line also, but he's taking care of business for the time being. So I will handle the introductions and get started here. Hope everybody is doing well this evening. Tuesday is the date, September 13th, 2016. Is the calendar date in full, and we are here to discuss racism and the gender divide between black people and the Kaepernick effect. Now, we know that this is going to be a very, very touchy topic. So, to get us started here, I would like to make sure that we give out the number and all the information first, before we delve in, and then we'll get started with a Dr. Wellsen clip for the Carl Nelson show, where she discussed a little bit about her viewpoint on how black feminism works, what her code is when it comes down to that, and where she stands. So our telephone number where we can be reached here at Black Talk Radio is 641-715-3660. The extension is 549032. Hit star 6 and 1 to comment on the air if you want to get online to discourse with us. Once again, the number is 641-715-3660, extension 549032. Hit star 6 and 1 to comment on the air. So without further ado, I'd like to go ahead and get started so we can kind of do a deep dive and delve into the topic and make sure that we can give the topic what is, you know, as well due. So, Mr. Reed, if you're ready, we can go ahead and start with Dr. Wellsen's clip. The clip is not that long. It shouldn't be no more than 4 minutes to kind of set the table for our discussion tonight.
0-7876, line 6, Fahim's in Atlanta. Fahim, you have a question for Dr. Wellsen?
More of a comment. First off, good evening to both of you, and I'd like to thank you for this timely and informative conversation. I'd like to make a comment and then suggest a strategy going forward, if I may. Prior to the break, Doctor, you mentioned the influx of immigrants coming across the border. Locally, we were having a radio discussion today about the influx of the children immigrants coming across the border. And a gentleman called himself Sirius called in, who is a Panamanian black, dark skin. And he suggested, he pointed out that if you look at these immigrant children coming across the border, they are all light, pale, almost Caucasian passing in complexion. And the reason because of that is because the coyotes that bring them over, if they are dark-skinned, they are treated harshly, charged double or triple sometimes, murdered, and used to haul drugs to be mules. And I thought that illustrated what the good doctor was telling us. And finally, I'd like to suggest going forward that we take a good look and use our secret weapon, which is our black women. You know, they've always been there. They've always been the backbone of our community. They outnumber us. They are more intelligent. More of them are educated, and they're passionate. Sisters like Cynthia McKinney are like the lone voice out there in the wilderness fighting hard. As we see women moving into the political arena, I think this is one of the strategies going forward that we're going to have to use, because the black man has been imprisoned and beat down so badly till he's almost useless. And I think that the sisters, they outnumber us again, like I said, and I think that's our future. Thank you.
Well, in all due respect, I'm not going to give the black men a pass in that way. In other words, if we are going to regain ourselves as a strong people, black males and black females are equally important. And we all have to decide that we're going to find our way to, find our way to be successful in bringing about justice on the planet. You know, the women, I say women, you know, of course, men and women are strong. But women appear stronger, maybe, because we have not been attacked in the same way. We have not been perceived as the threat to white genetic annihilation, because women cannot impose sexual intercourse. And so we are all mistreated as black people, but the war is specifically centered on the destruction of black men as the ones who are perceived as the threat to white genetic annihilation in ways that women are not. And so we all have to understand that, but we are not going to be a people if we do not have strong men and strong women. And so the men are just going to have to tool up and work double time with their understanding now of why the war has been so viciously directed against them as it is directed against all of us.
All right, thanks, Faye.
Thank you for saying that, sister. 800-450-7.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for Mr. Reed for playing that clip. And hopefully with that, we can get started here and start to discuss what has been basically going on, you know, on YouTube, famous blogs, and other places of intellectual discourse when it comes down to dealing with the main problem of racism, white supremacy. There seems to be, not seems, there is clearly a gender divide. And when I say gender divide, I mean specifically black people of age, and this includes young people. So I will go basically from 17, 18 on up. There's different degrees. People have different degrees of understanding when it comes down to the system of racism, white supremacy. And there's also a lot of different viewpoints as far as what's going on between both groups and how both groups have been impacted by racism. So what I would like to do to kind of get it started here is give a definition on one of the actual terms that is used to define the viewpoint of the black woman. Well, it's being thrown around as one of the main viewpoints of black women. I'm not going to say this is all, but this is something that is very, very popular now. It's used in magazine articles and blogs across the internet, and that is intersectionality. And I like to give a quick definition for intersectionality, and it just brief, just so we can get started here. Intersectionality theory, or intersectionality, or intersectional theory, is a term first coined in 1989 by American civil rights advocate and leading scholar of critical race theory, Kimberly Williams Crenshaw. It is the study of overlapping, intersecting social identities and related systems of oppression, domination, and discrimination. The theory suggests and seeks to examine how various biological and social and cultural categories such as gender, race, class, ability, social orientation, religion, caste, and age, nationality, and other sectarian axes of identity intersect on multiple and often simultaneous levels. So with that quick definition, I'd like to check to see, hey, Paradox, are you on the line now, sir?
Yeah, I'm on. I've been on.
Okay, cool. So you heard the clip. So basically, I'd like to kind of go over this, and I think we have our guests online. Do we have the callers online, Mr. Reed? I'm sorry.
Area code 240 from the conference line.
Yes, sir.
Yes, so this is.
Can you all hear me?
Yep, we can hear you. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So how would you like to introduce yourself on the program today? As far as like what would you like to go by?
You go by T Dog.
Okay. All right. All right. So we have our third compadre, part of the Code Breakers. T Dog is basically on the line, calling in, and hopefully did you hear the beginning of the program, Dr. Wellson's clip?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good. So I guess, Paradox, if you want, I'd like to go ahead and go over to T-Dog and see if let me just call you T instead of the dog at the end. I don't want to get people confused there. But, if you don't mind, you could just kind of like give, a quick illustration of what your viewpoints is about the system of racism and how you see the gender divide, since this is going to be the topic we're going to discuss today. What is your viewpoint of what the gender divide is and how it's basically impacting the relationships between black males and black women in 2016? Do you hear me? You on the line?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So paying attention to a lot of the social media that's been going on surrounding the gender divide that you're talking about, and a lot of it appears to be, at least in my observation, not fully defined in terms of the words, phrases being used. I think that in any system of oppression, you're going to have a divide between males and females. And that could be any race of persons, any creed, color, religion, etc. So one thing, and I see points on both sides that I do can understand and agree with. I mean, intersectionality, which seems to be like a catchphrase a lot of times, and I'm not sure that when everyone uses it or people that do use it truly understand what it means. And obviously I'm not the creator that coined the term, but based on my understanding of it, it's dealing with systems of oppression that are layers underneath of a general overarching system of oppression. Kind of piggybacking on what you were saying, D. So I can see how, being classed as a female, especially a black female in this type of system, could be a double blow. With that being said, I think that a lot of what's being talked about relative to that classification can be divisive as well, though, in terms of us coming together as a whole, people that are classified as black males and black females. I think that in this day and age, one thing that I did notice, though, is very important, and I'll kind of wrap up with what I'm saying here. One thing I did notice is that a lot of what people are talking about in terms of intersectionality, it doesn't address, if we consider ourselves to be in a patriarchal society, it doesn't address religion. And I might have missed those points, but religion, and people were free to believe what they want to. I don't have to take issue with that. But what I do notice, and you do the research, is that the three Abrahamic religions, you know, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, is highly patriarchal, highly masculinized. In fact, most of the people, leaders of the churches, synagogues, masjids, are male. And so if people are using that particular doctrine, yet preaching something different in terms of intersectionality, but not addressing that, which is, I think, a major issue, then I think that just kind of furthers the divide. So I think that's an unanswered question that needs to be addressed. And I'll leave the floor for you, gentlemen.
Yeah, thank you for, you know, providing your perspective on intersectionality. All right, Paradox, what say you about the term, before we just do a deep dive into the topic, what say you about the term intersectionality, which, you know, pretty much is the term for black feminism, used as a term to basically connect the layers of systems of pressures or oppressions that are being basically felt by women of color. I don't like to use that term, women of color, because it's kind of like, that's a little bit shaky. It's not really clearly defined, but hopefully people that are listening understand exactly what I'm saying. So what say you about intersectionality and black feminism?
Well, that's just, we'll do, I mean, I'm not going to try to go too far with it, but I'll read a little bit about, I guess, the person who maybe coined the term. So I think, and someone can correct
Kimberly,
me.
Kimberly Crenshaw.
Yeah. The black legal scholar Kimberly Crenshaw coined the term intersectionality in an essay she did back in 1989. Demarginalizing the intersection of race and sex, a black feminist critique of anti-discrimination doctrine, feminist theory, and anti-racist politics. And she's claiming that intersectionality is not an abstract notion, but a description of the way multiple oppressions are experienced. And she basically used analogies like traffic intersections, crossroads, and concretizing the concept. So I just want to put that out there, as well as I think she also argues that black women are discriminated against in ways that often do not fit within the legal categories of either racism or sexism, but a combination of both racism and sexism. Yet the legal system has generally defined sexism as based upon an unspoken reference to the injustice confronted by all, including white women, while defining racism to refer to those faced by all, including black men and other people of color. This framework frequently renders black women legally invisible and without legal recourse. And I just pause there. Now, I don't think I'm going to sound what I just read. I mean, there's so much to discuss. We can probably have 20 programs on this, and definitely want to get some women, some black women involved. So I do believe that when we're discussing topics about the black woman, that even though we did cue it up with Dr. Welsing, but I think that having women on would be definitely beneficial to get their perspective on it, obviously. But one thing I did think interesting is looking more into intersectionality and feminism, or black feminism, which is separate from feminism, which in itself is interesting. that you got to separate the two things out because of the marginalization of the black body in general or the black person, that racism and sexism, which I find interesting when I think about Mr. Fuller's nine areas of people activity and looking at sex, probably sex and war and law, reading through some of this stuff on feminism, black feminism, Marxism, intersectionality, etc. But the racism and sexism, the way I'm interpreting it, I could be misunderstanding it, but or misreading it. But first, in my observation, the root of our environment is based off of race. And so to make it seem like racism is, I don't want to say equal, but somehow on the same plane as sexism, I could be misunderstanding something. Or even if racism is equal to maybe patriarchal systems, or racism equal to just other things. I'll put it that way. Just thinking about racism as the founding principle of the environment, it feels like sexism would fall under that, or whatever you want to coin it, feminism, whatever you want to call it, should fall under that in my mind. I could be wrong about that, obviously, but something definitely to think about as far as what does it mean to be white and their power and the power dynamic they have in place. And then how they apply that to the system. And then within the system, living day to day in a civilization where you're trying to deal with discrimination, you're trying to deal with women's rights, etc. How do those things work together? Or how do those things intersect? And is there? And how would you structure those things? Would you consider racism and sexism the same thing, you know, equal to each other? Or really, what's the push? And so I know that's where you're going to go as far as getting deeper into it. But that's just some of my just kind of off-the-cuff thoughts about it. And that's just because when you think about the environment that we were placed in once we were conquered and captured, you know, you think to yourself, if it's 1705, 1756, are, you know, quote-unquote black males oppressing anybody, and then fast forward to 1864 or 1950, you know, when did black men get power to affect systematic things versus, and one thing we listened to, one of the females was talking about the difference between the system impacting you, you know, getting a mortgage, allowing you to have rights, rewriting constitutions, etc., versus dealing with things within the household, and where you have a male-female dynamic in a household, and what does that power structure looks like at that level, and how do you want to frame that versus sending you to war, for example, things of that nature. Just the levels of are things being conflated between intersectionality, feminism, and then the system of racism, white supremacy.
Yeah, and I want to stay right here and kind of move away from really kind of delving into what black women think and think about solely what our responsibility is until we can have a discourse with black women about, you know, what is it that is just causing the divide from their point of view. So I like to kind of go into what my viewpoint is about intersectionality and about how now it has basically caused a divide to where black males and black women, you know, we have a very, very, very difficult time interacting with each other, especially on who is basically being, I guess you want to call it the most damaged, or who's feeling the most effects on the system overall, as the overall system, racism, white supremacy. You will hear a lot of conversation stating about how black males are not for, or, you know, speaking up for black women. So when things happen to black women, young black women, children, you know, little girls that are being raped on a regular basis by other black men, little girls being violated that are maybe not as young as very, very young little girls, but still younger, between teenage years of 13 to 17, they're being violated by older males, and how we have pathologized a culture that has caused a divide to where we can't even speak to each other because we are having such difficulty on dealing with what the system basically have caused as far as a fracture, as far as our responses to the system. So when a black male goes into the analysis, or someone is basically doing a analysis of what the system is doing to other black males, which is causing them to act or behave this way, it sounds like a direct excuse to other people when they hear someone basically say, well, it's cause the system is doing this, and this is the reason why you have such a deprived such out of line behavior. Just recently, what was the holiday that we just experienced? Is it Memorial Day? Memorial Day, is that correct, fellas?
Labor Day.
September, okay. So we had Labor Day. So in New York, as everyone know, there was a young lady that got shot by a young male, young black male, that was trying to, I guess, advance or speak with her or dance with her. There's different, I guess, characterizations of what took place. But anyway, his advances were not, you know, reciprocated. And when that happened, he, you know, went ahead and attacked her and shot her in the eye, if I'm not mistaken, and killed her. Now, I don't know too many black males that are not outraged by that type of behavior, because the first thing you're thinking is, what is up with this particular person? This particular, I don't want a name call, but what is his deal on the reason why he feels like he needs to do that due to his advances not basically being warranted from this young black woman? But I need to go into detail about what that does as far as fracturing us even more, because whatever we're doing or however our response is not enough as far as what is basically being received by our counterpart, which is the black woman. So when they see us and they correspond with us, it doesn't seem like we're doing enough. And we all know that patriarchy, or the word patriarchy, has its own little connotation and meaning, especially when it delves down into the black community, so to speak. So, you know, if somebody is basically speaking, well, I'm a man and I'm supposed to be protecting the families and stuff like that, then, you know, our women are going to look at us and be like, well, you're not protecting anything. You let these drug dealers run the neighborhood. You don't say anything about these boys basically mistreating everyone in the neighborhoods. Of course, the Trigger City, Chicago, you see how they basically be running rampant. Corinne Gaines, when she passed, her black male counterpart, which he was older, by the way, you know, significantly older, he basically bailed out the back door and left her there to fend with the police. He was basically a coward. So we have all these different things that are basically coming and clashing. So when we try to discuss and we try to have a discourse about the system of racism to try to come together, we still have that particular program running in the background, blaming each other. And, you know, I would like to get into the black female bashing on another program, where that is basically becoming problematic, where black males feel like the way to solve this problem is by attacking black women. Me, Paradox, and T, we do not believe that. We believe that black women are basically the sole the soul, basically the soul of our race, if there's a, such a thing. We believe that basically they hold the keys to our family, and that we do not want to come across as someone that is basically not understanding the plight of the black woman, understanding the hurt of the black woman, and basically showing our love for black women. Did anybody want to jump in?
I was just going to say the black woman is God. That's all.
T, you had a comment you wanted to roll through, or?
I think I'm good. I think I might have went too deep at the top of the hour, but I thought I'd let it kind of progress a little bit before I get back into it.
All right, so I would like to kind of, you know, move ahead and kind of like get into another part of the divide. So let me ask. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Did you want to start with? So did you want a truth, or did you want to? Where was you going to go?
Say that again. Now, did I want truth?
Did you want truth, or were you going in a different direction?
No, we could do that. Go ahead.
I know you want to touch on the whole "Ain't I a Woman" as far as what she was going through in that time frame, then contrasting that against how that's being used, I think, in the feminist movement, I guess you could say.
Yeah, the Sojourner Truth. And for those that are not familiar with who Sojourner Truth is, Sojourner Truth was a abolitionist, one of the first abolitionists of the abolitionist movement against slavery, born Isabella Bomfrey. They don't have a date for her actual birth. They have a year, 1797, 1883. She probably was a lot older than that. She lived for a very long time. And basically, she was one of the first to speak about, I guess, what would be termed as the intersectionality. She's always quoted. And the speech that she's always quoted to using, that people use to describe her viewpoint as far as feminist thought is, "Ain't I a Woman?" And she was just basically contrasting her treatment as a black woman with 13 children, and contrasting all the other women that she saw, you know, around her, which happened to be white, and how they basically got treated. And she was talking about, if I'm not mistaken, basically no doors are open for me, nobody helps me out of a carriage, you know, mm-hmm. things of that nature, basically trying to illustrate the point that the barrier or the treatment that I'm receiving is different due to my blackness, not just the fact that I'm a woman. Now, of course, there is different triggers, because she is someone that is of a different gender, which has a different type of response out of people. So we can't be, you know, totally oblivious to that.
Mm. Thank you. Make a great point. Kind of alluded to as well, you know, as far as I do see the validity to intersectionality. I mean, because it does speak to interpretation is another thing, but it does, at least from this inception and from what I see, I think its intended purpose is to address underlying issues arising from the larger overarching oppressor system. So I definitely agree with you on that point, Dean.
And I'll just say, as far as what Crenshaw was saying when I was reading from earlier, she also had said that after she introduced the term, it was widely adopted because they feel like it encompassed in a single word the simultaneous experience of the multiple oppressions faced by black women. But it's not a, they're saying it's not a new concept. Since the times of slavery, black women have eloquently described the multiple oppressions of race, class, and gender, referring to the concept of interlocking oppressions. A lot of words out here, by the way. Double jeopardy, triple jeopardy, et cetera, et cetera. So it's very interesting that there's a lot of terminologies trying to wrap my mind around a lot of this stuff. So you say it was very academic.
Yeah, it's a very academic. It's a very academic discussion, and you know, I think that a lot of times it is being made to be a lot more difficult than what it needs to be, because what you're talking about is different interactions. Everybody has a different experience when it comes down to interacting with each other, and if you know, just to be bluntly speaking about it, there's always going to be a dominant person in a relationship, especially when you're dealing with a relationship that involves I guess it would be the eighth area of activity, sex.
Yep.
And when that comes into play, most of the time the person that holds the upper hand in that exchange mistreats the other party. Now that goes both ways. You know, that goes both ways on whether it is female to male, male to female, female to female, you know, male to male, trans, whatever you want to add on to that, pansexual identities, that doesn't matter. So that's the reason why this term, you know, intersectionality, can be taken into different directions. And what I would like to do is to kind of illustrate that point by queuing up the second clip, and we can possibly discuss that a little bit and kind of have fun with it. But this is the younger generation, and you can see how it's kind of getting confused and getting a little grainy. Now, one of these people that are speaking is a young, white, college-educated, I would imagine, you know, female, and the other one is a young, classified as black woman that is speaking about the term intersectionality and how it breaks down and how the different definitions work. So I guess this would be intersectionality for dummies and for a youthful audience. So Mr. Reed, if you want, you can go ahead and cue this up, and then we can discuss at the end of the clip.
In New York, and I'm on the Decoded set, and I'm here with internet badass Francesca Ramsey of MTV Decoded.
Hey friends!
We talked about feminism a lot on Braless, and as you've started to learn more, maybe you've heard this big word intersectionality tossed around a bit.
Maybe you've asked yourself what it is, why it's important, or what's the meaning of life, which I've asked myself a few times.
So we can definitely help with those first two questions, but maybe not the last one?
Intersectionality means looking at the intersections of people's identities. It's a type of feminism that looks at how women of different backgrounds experience oppression.
So for all you sciencey babes out there, it's basically shining a light through a prism to look at all the different wavelengths. Yeah, we're all women, but it's not enough to just look at the white light. Our background and our identities and the issues that are affecting us are very diverse, just as diverse as the colors of the rainbow.
Women of color, trans women, lesbians, bisexual women, asexual women, women with disabilities, women with mental illness, old women, young girls, diverse body types, poor women, immigrant women, there's so many women!
And basically every woman that the mainstream feminist movement has a bad habit of leaving behind. From its wee beginnings, the feminist movement has focused mostly on the issues of middle-class white ladies,
which is leaving out a lot of women. How can a movement for women really be effective without addressing the needs of all women?
Oops, it can't, and that's why intersectionality is important. Without it, it's not really feminism. Feminism is for everyone.
So how can we get our intersectional feminism on? It's as easy as 1, 2, 3. 1, examine our own privileges. 2, listen to each other. And 3, practice feminism through a broader, more inclusive lens.
Privileges are places where we hold more power in society than others. For example, I'm white, I'm cisgender, I'm able-bodied, I have a roof over my head and food on the table. These are privileges that not every woman has, and that shapes my experience of the world.
Being straight, cisgender, and able-bodied means that there are a whole bunch of challenges I don't have to experience.
So to support equality for others, first I gotta understand what my privilege prevents me from experiencing.
On feminist issues where we hold privilege, it's crucial to listen to the women who don't, to listen to their experiences, to see the world through a more complex lens, and to raise the voices of those who have less power.
Because you can't exactly walk the walk if you have no idea where the walk even goes. So we're gonna put our intersectional skills to the test with a little challenge. We're gonna draw three feminist issues from this magical hat, and then we're gonna talk about how to address them intersectionally.
Let's do this. Equal pay. All right, so the not intersectional perspective would be women make 78 cents to every man's dollar.
Right, because that's really only what white women make compared to the man's dollar. The intersectional approach would be that black women get paid 68 cents to the man's dollar, and then Hispanic women make 54 cents.
Boom. All right, birth control and abortion access.
Okay, so the not intersectional approach would be women should have the right to choose what's right for her, which sounds pretty good, right?
Right, but intersectional approach, the poor can't always make a choice that's right for them if it's not actually affordable or within reasonable reach. So class, race, and gender presentation all affect someone's access to reproductive health care. All right, last one.
Street harassment.
Okay, so non-intersectional would be women have a right to exist in public without being harassed.
And the intersectional approach would be women and LGBT folks all experience elevated levels of street harassment, and they have a right to exist in public without being harassed too. Street harassment is often motivated by sexism, homophobia, and transphobia, which are all connected.
Strip away all the fancy language, and all we're really talking about is looking out for each other.
And nobody's gonna be perfect. It's okay to make mistakes. The key is to make an honest effort to keep educating ourselves so we can keep moving forward.
Which is exactly what we intend to do. Thanks for joining us for Braless, everyone.
And make sure to click over here and watch the video that we made together for MTV Decoded.
Bye!
Bye!
Hey everyone, Lacey Green here, and we are at VidCon, and I wanted to talk to all of you about one of my very favorite topics, which is women on YouTube.
Oof, confusion. Like one of the things that I wanted to kind of get to, and I guess we can kind of go delve deep and kind of get into it now. This whole thing about everybody being an oppressor and you know, in this type of system where clearly there seems to be a lot of different viewpoints about who's doing the oppression, the oppression. So I think they brought up about two or three things that are clearly connected to the system of racism and white supremacy. They brought up the wage gap, the differences as far as people being paid. Now, as far as I know, the people that are being paid are basically set up by a system that's already in place, that's been placed for a while now. And as far as I know, all males do not participate in that particular guise of oppression. So this would basically be white men, white women also, by the way, that are basically setting the standard for who gets paid what in this particular system of racism. They also talked about street harassment, and I wanted to kind of go over this because I think that this one here is a little bit kind of confusing, because what exactly is street harassment? Where is the gauge? There are different viewpoints on this. Street harassment can be even approaching a young lady and saying hello to try to get to know someone on the street. If she turns around and she doesn't want to talk to you, she could say that I was basically being harassed because she felt so. Or is street harassment when someone basically is being told, hey, you know, I don't want to talk to you, and then of course the response becomes violent or becomes, you know, violent in nature as far as like a disparaging comment or something to that effect. So there are a lot of different things that I had that I wanted to kind of discuss on this, but that was some of my first initial viewpoints on it. Do you guys have any comments on that clip?
Well, I just want to say, this is T. Can you check the line? I think we might have a female caller on the line.
Well, Scott, our engineer will be right back in a minute.
Okay. So you brought up 2 points, D. One was, the latter was street harassment. And the first one, can you refresh me on that again? The first one was in regard to, what was it? D.
The DC drop off?
The rest of the drop. What was it? What was the first point? Heard of?
As far as what the clip or?
Yeah, as far as the clip. I know you mentioned street harassment. I'll just talk on street harassment. As guys, we do know that. They've come up with a term for it to apply to it, but we do know that women, period, experience, and we've seen it, you know, whether you're at the club or, you know, just walking around where, you know, males can be aggressive in terms of trying to get their number or, you know, trying to basically associate themselves with the female in some kind of way. So, I mean, that can't be denied. It's just the question of where are they going to go from here. And that they've kind of, I kind of get concerned whenever a term is assigned to something in a way that I think is going to be used to implement some type of control. So that would be my concern. Where would that go from there in terms of street harassment? Is that going to become like harassment on the job, you know, which I don't agree with, but
yeah,
you know, where does it go from there? That would be my question.
Well, to be honest with you, we are responsible as black males in our communities when it comes down to the safeties and, you know, our counterpart, black women, feeling safe to be able to walk freely. I don't care how she's dressed. You know, that can be discussed by people that are closest to her that do not want any kind of sexual advances towards her that would speak and, you know, share their viewpoint about however she dressed. So I think that should be something that is discussed among black males. I put that solely on us as far as the responsibility. My concern is with harassment is that where is the line for it? Everybody has a different pressure for it. Now, I have seen something that has been deemed as harassment, or that I would consider to be harassment, with a woman, a black woman, in her interactions with a black male. But one black male said the same thing to the woman, and she did not, you know, accept the advance. And then the other black male said something to the black woman, and she was, you know, she was open to him. So there's that dynamic where that inconsistency that you see. And I think that sometimes, and this is not right, this is not wrong, this is not a right or wrong thing, I just think that sometimes when other males see that, they feel slighted. And if they're like a highly emotional person and they feel embarrassed, then that's where the attack comes from a lot of times. So
oof, you said a lot just on now, the, man. On the, that's what that.
If I could chime in.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I don't disagree with you, D, but I think, too, on the flip side of that, there's been instances where I've seen this for myself with other black men, but men in general, even myself, when like you said, where you draw the line, because it's been instances where I've, maybe held the door or held the elevator door for a woman, you know, or, you know, complimented on her dress. You know, she looked nice. And it hasn't always been accepted genuinely, or at least how I conveyed it was not in a hostile manner or a underhanded tone or way of or diction. So you're right. I mean, you do have to. It's a very fine line, and like I said, I think that's where it becomes dangerous, because again, where is it headed? You know, who defines ultimately, and we can obviously guess pretty easily on who will define ultimately if street harassment becomes some sort of legislated law, to where either there's some type of penalty attached, or in terms of a financial penalty, you know, or some type of you know, citation attached to that, or some type of jail time. So I think we should be very careful with that. I mean, because ultimately, people are in public, and when you're in public, you know, I think ultimately the biggest thing that I think should apply is, as long as you're not doing any harm, in terms of you're not physically accosting anybody, you're not damaging any property, I think if we keep those in mind, we can kind of avoid getting into gray areas and then coming up with more crafty mind work to implement something that may not be in the best interest of the general public at large.
Yeah, I'd like to just one more time give out the number. I think that we do have the caller, and if the caller is listening on the line, they can press 6 then 1. If I'm not mistaken, isn't that correct, Mr. Reed?
*61.
*61. If you would like to get on and speak, so whenever you're ready, you could do that and jump on and, you know, share your thoughts, or, you know, if you have anything that you would like to share.
Okay, they are requesting to speak.
Your okay.
Mic is open.
Greetings. Hi. Welcome to the Code Breakers. Hello.
Hello. Hi.
How you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. Listening to your show, loving everything about it. I know you were asking for a female's input in
Absolutely.
Terms of some of the things that you were discussing. Mm-hmm. And I'm newly conscious, so I'm not probably as articulate as you guys at explaining stuff. But because I've been reading a lot, there's a lot of emotion in me. So I hope I can be really clear, really concise, and not take up too much of your time.
Well, you are in a safe space, and we will allow you to share. So the floor is yours, and go ahead, please. Please share your thoughts.
Okay. Overall, I mean, when I look at the system of racism, overall, when I look at life, period, I realize, especially in having, now that I'm reading a lot of stuff, I realize that Black women as a whole, we carry a lot of pain, because we've come from a situation whereby, of course, we were stolen from Africa. From the moment that happened, we were raped in front of our men. Our men couldn't defend us. They would attack our men left, right, and center. We got on the plantation. It was the same thing. Our men had to stand idly by while we were raped. Our children were raped. And sometimes he was raped. We have constantly seen him emasculated. And now in modern times, I mean, beyond the gun violence and the segregation and lynching, et cetera, beyond that, I mean, now it's more sophisticated tools. We got vaccinations. We got all kinds of things. And we just different even issues, vaccinations. We get, it's just a total attack on him. And we care for him. We love him. But we know that he needs to help us, and we need to help him. And a lot of times we feel so helpless. We're frustrated. And even still, sometimes we're his cheerleader. We're his biggest cheerleader. So you'll see sometimes with people that get famous, like say the Jordans of the world, we'll see them get famous, and we're his biggest cheerleader. And then he turns around and he finds someone that doesn't look like us, doesn't reflect us. It's a lot of pain. And I don't think we realize how much it is. It's something that is carried through unconsciously with us. You know, from the plantation era, our mama's been carrying it, our grandmother's been carrying it, great-grandma, passed down to the generations. We've learned a poor code of behavior, a poor way of acting. We've never even had it psychologically dealt with. Which, I mean, people go through the slightest trauma and they're in a therapist's office. We've never truly dealt with this. We have a country that even doesn't even acknowledge it. We live in a country that doesn't acknowledge it. And these guys, man, the European man, he is no joke. And his woman supports him. They want our annihilation. And if they don't want our annihilation, they want to continue to use us as guinea pigs and people they could constantly maintain their wealth from. Because it's really wealth at the end of the day. But, I mean, all of this that we're going through, it's a lot of pain. I think sometimes that manifests itself in violence on our end, low self-esteem, anger. We feel all of that, and we carry that all the time. So sometimes you see women, and they snap for the slightest thing. We're carrying all of that, and we don't even realize that we are. For me, I think I don't just believe in sitting down and then just talking about something and not coming up with solutions. I believe for us, this is just my belief, it's like a three-tiered thing. We need, in order to solve this, because this is a heck of a thing, this is a system that is so much in place that if we try to fight it, what happens is they have a military to enforce it. Okay, so I feel in order to come up against a system like that, we can't just do it with the one person or two. We got to have a serious sense of togetherness to really, really confront it. I think the first step is knowledge, the second is planning, and the third is execution. I didn't know so many things. I was just bobbing along. I didn't know until I started picking up books. And I think I watched Boyce Watkins, and then I saw, then from him it went to like John Henry Clark, and then I started getting interested. And when that knowledge started hitting me, like I said, if we start just with the knowledge, that's what you guys are doing, trying to spread the word, trying to speak the truth, just knowledge in and of itself. Because if the black man, the black woman, the black child knows who they are, oppression ends yesterday. And they know that. We are all around the world. They have fixed it in such a way that you sit down, you watch TV, you're constantly, it's almost like being mentally brutalized. Because constantly you're seeing nothing of yourself, to the point where every other nation, every other, seemingly, they come in and they want to identify with the guys who seem like they have everything. Who aren't pictured on TV as being sick or on drugs or violent towards one another. TV is, to me, one of the worst drugs ever. So dealing with that, it's just we carry a lot of pain. And if we start to know ourselves, before we get into that planning phase of how we're going to truly dismantle it, all those other things leave. Sexism leaves, you know, like how you said, street harassment, all that stuff leaves. Because when we look one another in the eye, when I look you in your eye as a black man, I know you respect me, I know you value me, I know you love me. Point blank in the period. There'll be no issues. And if we start to embrace again education and truly, we've been taught not to love books. We've been taught that we're dumb. We ain't interested in books. It's always a joke. I'm going to wrap it up, but even watching like T.I., I tend to watch TV a lot, which is bad, trying to reduce it. Even watching his show and watching his kids, a couple of them, you know, not that bright. And it's like a big joke every time he can't figure out something. This is crazy. We have to embrace education, man. It's the only way. Because without that, you can't plan. And without planning, you can't execute. So that's all I got to say. We carry a lot of pain. There's a lot of pain, but we could get through it. Thank you.
Wow. Do you have a a name that you would like to go by? You don't have to give us your real name, but anything that you.
C.
All right, C. Thank you so much for giving us the female black woman's perspective that is much needed, because a lot of times when black males get to speak on this topic about the divide that we're experiencing, normally we're not able to come together and have a calm discourse. There's this back and forth and these gotcha moments, and we're here to fully support. We're not here to demean or to silence your perspective. You had great points. I don't have anything to add to that. And in fact, I like to, I guess we can kind of go into, Mr. Breed, don't we have a break that we can get into?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and take a quick break, and then at the top of the hour, you can go ahead and play the last clip, and we can kind of go ahead and discuss after that clip is played, and kind of get further into this discussion.
You are listening to Code Breakers on Black Talk Radio Network. New black media for the new millennium.
All right, we are back. This is the Code Breakers on Black Talk Radio. D, you want to go ahead?
Yeah, so if you want, we can go ahead and queue up the clip. The third one, the very, very last one, and this is...
I'm kind of confused. Is it the... Did you want me to start at the 30-minute
mark? The 30-minute mark, okay, yeah. It's towards just the 30-minute mark, and then just play it all the way through. It shouldn't be that much longer. But she was kind of going in and describing the difficulty on intersectionality and how basically the term has basically been lost. So I'll let her go ahead and discuss it. But this is one of the most renowned black feminists that's out there, Dr. Patrice Hill Collins.
Academic settings and in a racist social movements, they're not there because the story starts, the clock starts with the moment of discovery in the academy. So it is primed to be yet another academic discourse that can function as another academic discourse. You following this? Oh yeah. I want to give you the real deal from my point of view. Okay, it's my truth, but it could actually be the truth. All right. It erases historical and contemporary praxis, both inside and outside the academy. Intersectionality has no organic connection with political activism. So this sets up another interesting split between intersectionality as an academic discourse and people in the academy who are doing intersectional work in diversity initiatives, things like that. So that whole hierarchy is not disrupted by this particular story because you only focus on the point of origin and think about the scholarship. So, and then I'm just going to skip that last point because I want to come back to that in another point. All right, so that's sort of what is the narrative that's emerging? Which definitions of intersectionality will prevail? I just want to unpack this whole notion that the growing definitional consensus that intersectionality is a feminist theory of identity. Now, I'm sure there's a fair amount of work that's done that is a feminist theory of identity, and I'm not opposed to that. The problem for me is when the entire field becomes identified that way. When it becomes redefined as something that is the ownership of feminism. Now, women's studies scholars have been very, very central, being in the front of the line and bringing intersectional work into many, many institutions. That has to be acknowledged. But that's very different than folding intersectionality itself into a discourse within feminism. That actually misreads the history of intersectionality itself. If you're looking at the populations who were involved in social movements, certainly women were involved, but just because black women were involved, it's not like we're going to take the women part and leave the black part behind. You could just as easily flip the script and say intersectionality emerges in the context of anti-racist struggle, as is the argument that is advanced within critical race theory. All right, so you get this really, you know, interesting claiming of ownership and colonizing intersectionality feeling when we want to make it into feminism. Kathy Davis's much read piece in 2008, here's the title. And I like the article, by the way, it's the title that really drives me crazy. Intersectionality as a buzzword, a sociology of science perspective on what makes a feminist theory successful. So in other words, intersectionality is a successful feminist theory because it is unspecified and can travel as a buzzword. Now what bothered me about this piece was she defined it as a feminist theory, prematurely, all right? So anyhow, that's one thing, feminist. Now the theory part, I teach theory. You do realize that people are afraid of theory? The students come in and their little eyes are like, well, who? These are grown-ups. I'm not talking like little kids, I'm talking graduate students, all right? And they come in, not all graduate students, obviously. But many of the graduate students come in and I'm so afraid of theory. I've had people confess to me like they're really afraid. And I'm thinking, oh, this is so sad. part of what this is the theory practice binary that's a hierarchy. That somehow people think that thinking, the work of doing thinking, which is what theoretical work is super white-collar work. It's kind of interesting that it's white-collar work. All right. So, you know, sort of think about this theory-practice binary, which is reinforced all the time. So you've got people who do the thinking and the people who do the doing. And this is really significant for intersectionality if you really want to have a critical praxis, which is really a recursive relationship between thinking and doing, where the doing is also thinking at the same time. It's something different. So it creates space to do certain things. I mean, theory legitimates certain things and delegitimates others. Because if you're arguing in the terrain of the abstract, it's really easy to make claims because nobody's coming after you except other theorists. And if you read some of the theory, some of it is like pretty damn hard to understand. All right, I'm sure you've noticed this. Who do you think benefits if things are written in exclusionary language?
I hope everybody heard the clip and got the gist of what Dr. Collins was trying to say there. So hopefully, and one of the things that she was, I guess she was getting to is who does it benefit when this particular term intersectionality and black feminism, when does this turn into a just an intellectual discourse, and who are we trying to educate here? Who is basically becoming the beneficiaries of us basically confusing the people that are the most oppressed or the most vulnerable to the system of racism, white supremacy? Because at the end of the day, one of the things that I think is still dividing black men and black women is the feeling that, as C was basically stating, the feeling that they feel like they are silenced or that they are not being acknowledged as far as being an equal partner or equal recipient of basically the system. So I still believe that these particular professors, especially Patrice Hill, Dr. Patrice Hill Collins, I think that she knows that the system of racism, white supremacy is the problem. White people at the end of the day is the problem, and she don't want her particular theories or the way she believes that, you know, black women are being oppressed to be hijacked by the academic discourse that is taking place. Let me just give the number before we go back into the discussion, and then I'll open it up to you guys. The number once again that you can call to call in and share your thoughts is 641-715-3660. 641-715-3660, extension 549-032. Please press hit *6 and 1 to comment on the air or to share any thoughts or concerns that you may have. Anybody else had any thoughts or any about that clip?
She said a lot. She's definitely a lot smarter than I am. I mean, I don't know. It was a lot of words, said a lot of things. A lot of stuff on theory, and just I was trying to get an understanding of. Do you know what kind of audience that was that she was in? You didn't look that far into that clip.
It looked like college students.
They're in college. They're at the UMass.
UMass.
Yeah, they were speaking at University of Massachusetts. So take that for what it's worth. And most of that crowd, I would imagine, would be classified as white.
And she is a black female, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's just what I was trying to wrap my mind around was just how do you, are you know, black women are in the process, or has been in the process, I think, of trying to create a position. And again, I'm not obviously versed in it, but I'm just thinking, are they, you know, are you trying to get a position within the system, obviously, but just trying to figure out how to assert yourself, how to create some kind of balance, or trying to figure out what's the best approach based off of how the environment is treating you. And so clearly, I'm going to make an assumption that feminism in its purest form, or feminism pushed by white women, wasn't beneficial enough, possibly. So, you know, you introduce black feminism, you also introduce intersectionality, or you introduce that term, I should say. But, you know, where there's a group of black women that feels like they need this to exist for them to obtain some sort of power within the system. You know, that's where I'm thinking of. The more I'm reading about, unless I, you know, obviously hear something different, seems to be where my mind is going with just, you know, trying to either, not necessarily feel like, but, you know, accomplish something. You know, unity, just creating a sense, possibly creating some sense of unity. Now, the concern I have about all of it is that where does the white man and the white woman fit into this stuff? You know, is this something that they're pushing and I can't see it, right? Is this something underlining here that I can't locate? And how does any of this impact black unity or the black family? Now, I know a lot of people who are much, much smarter than me and much more well-read. I do know that they have, you know, Dr. Welsing, the first person to come to my mind right now, but not only that, but even Dr. Kerr and some others, just the understanding of how the black man or the black male is impacted, the black female is impacted, the breakdown of our group, and how that's being done by the white man and the white woman. So the white family or the white society as a whole, its impact on the black civilization, I just say it that way. How does the overall system impact us globally? And then, you know, so if you take that thought and then you try to, you know, set it up against, you know, black feminism or black women trying to obtain more rights or feel that things are more fair, if that's what the push is, I can understand it trying to figure something out, trying to figure out how can we feel like as a group, even if it's just from the academic perspective, even though a lot of that stuff does trickle down to the average everyday person, you know, what benefits can you get from that? And, you know, are we starting to see that group somehow harm, not saying it does harm, but somehow harm the black family? And then what is the impact of it when it comes to the black man? And what I mean by that, just to get more, I guess, specific, is, you know, is it, you know, from a financial perspective? So does this play a role in it when you're with someone, you're with a black woman, she makes more money than you? Does that impact some of this? Or is it that the black man is impotent and it's not my system, it's ran by white people, that I can't protect you in the court systems? So you have now decided to, you know, leverage that position, basically, which obviously makes us respond or react a certain way as far as the black man. I'm just curious about what impacts does it have on the unity of the black family? Because like what the caller had mentioned about, she used Michael Jordan as an example. We'll just say athletes are used possibly as propaganda tools, you know, and so a percentage of them may tend to date or marry non-white, non-black women or white women. And what is that visually, what kind of visual impact does that have? Also, when basic stuff like when you're at a grocery store or you on the internet, you see images of white women who have a certain look, even though that can get complicated because they're puffing their lips out, they're making their asses bigger, etc. So not to go down that road, not to get too into that mud, but just how those things impact us unifying. Or at some point in time, where was the black, which we know it is, I'm just asking the question obviously, but the stronger the black family became, was it important for white society to come up with some things to disrupt that process? Or yes. go ahead.
No, I wanted to kind of like cue this up because we do have a caller. I think it is Black Existence, caller from the 702. If you want to go ahead and comment or share a thought, then please feel free.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. And it was actually funny just listening to what the other man had said. I'm sorry, I just started listening to the show, but I was
welcome. Thank you. Go ahead and please feel free and share.
Well, I actually do find it funny that, and I was actually just talking to one of my friends, another black female, today about it, how it seems like so many, even of like our black leaders, they are with non-black women, and it definitely affects me, visually, because it does, like, it's almost like a fight in, like, with myself as far as me wanting to embrace what I naturally am, but then on the other hand, maybe not feeling so accepted by black men. And I actually recently had like an issue with that, with a black man finally commenting on, like, I guess he liked how I looked, but that was because I put some weave in my hair and I wasn't wearing my natural afro, which I typically do. And it definitely, like, hurts me as far as definitely, like, self-image. And it's kind of like, I don't, I kind of, like, really feel torn, don't really know what to do. That's all.
Sharing. Thank you for sharing. If you don't mind, let me ask you just one more question. When you experience that kind of interaction with a black male that make you feel in that kind of way, do you think that has a lot to do with the reason why we have such a divide between both genders, why there seems to be this so-called, I don't believe in the gender war, by the way, and you are talking to, and I don't mean to kind of like extrapolate this and make it seem like there's a lot of black men that believe this, but there are a good number of us that love natural hair, whatever that means, where however the hair grows out of your head, it is perfectly fine. So there are men that do appreciate that. But do you find that when someone does this and their interaction with you is triggering that kind of response, do you think that kind of energy kind of goes out and then make black women as a whole feel rejected, and then it kind of like spreads, even though it may just be this one male that's basically causing this damage?
Well, with me, definitely. And I was talking to my friend earlier, and she happens to be lighter skinned with a big butt, but she said it's kind of even not, it's like our treatment from black men are kind of like similar. And then we started to talk about, now it seems like it, with me, I feel like it kind of went from, well, like, you know, it's With the progression of the years, black men wanting lighter and lighter and lighter and lighter until you're not black at all, but you do have, like you said, like the black features, which kind of is definitely confusing, because if we naturally have these things, but it's not like Paul Mooney said, it's beautiful on them, but it's ugly on us. And it definitely, I feel like I've definitely noticed that, and I do feel like it it affects me. Like I said, it affects my friends. And, like, even also, like, I stopped watching music videos years ago because I would see that, you know, the women, like I said, were starting to get more and more fair skin, and I don't put anything past somebody because, of course, we can't choose our, you know, how we look on the outside, but it does definitely makes me feel like, you know, if I did want to have, like, you know, a black man, just not being worthy enough because I'm not naturally what he might want, or what it seems to be like what they might want now.
Very interesting. Hey, I know you haven't spoken lately. Do you have anything to share? And I'm sorry, Black Existence is your name that you want to go by?
No, that was something I was
okay. That was a comment. I'm sorry. So what is the name that you want to go by on the program so we can at least you know, reference you just in case somebody makes a comment?
Sure, Jay.
Jay. Okay, no problem, Jay. Hey, T, you wanted to share any comment with the sister that's online, with Jay, that's on the line right now?
Greetings, Jay. You know, definitely appreciate you calling into the show because a lot of times I think with the brothers, you know, we tend to carry on a lot of discourse without the input of our fellow. We are both on the same slave ship, so without input from, you know, our sisters, it tends to make the argument or the discussion one-sided. So, again, thank you for calling in. With that being said, I want to share something with you all that's kind of personal to me, and I shared it with my wife, who's a black sister, by the way, dark skin. And growing up, you know, as a young boy, you know, and this is not to excuse anything, because I think once you reach a certain age of attainment, you should be able to come to a level of consciousness where you can decide, you know, wisely for yourself, just by looking at your mother, for example, what's the best choice. But coming up, you know, all I would see was like white women. You know, you go to the grocery store, you know, go to checkout line, you see magazines, white women, straight hair, blonde hair, blue eyes, TV. And even back then it was more so, it was very overexposed. Not to say that today it's gotten much better, but you do see some black females on TV, not as much as I feel that there should be. But anyway, there was a point in time when I was probably about maybe between 10, 12 years old, where I was like, all I was attracted to was white women. And this is coming from somebody who, you know, I lived in an area that was predominantly black. So, but as I got older, I started to recognize that that was put in me. That was a programmed mode. That was programmed conditioning. I think it's like almost like on Talib Kweli and Mos Def's album Black Star, they had a skit on there, and the brother said, "Even my conditioning, my conditioner has been conditioned." So, I think every black guy somehow either they go either one of two directions. They recognize, hey, you know, this is essentially propaganda that's been put in me to make me not only dislike my fellow female counterpart, but dislike myself as well, because guess what, my hair grows the same way as yours does. So it's a form of self-hate, and like I said, you go either one or two directions. Either you go off the cliff and you say, you know what, I don't want anything to do with, you know, black women, or you say, you know what, I'm gonna be the underdog and I'm gonna love black women. And there's a lot of brothers that I know that love black women. They're not really into the white women. And I think that the image that's been portrayed by celebrities, people in positions of a power, or even if that's real or just pretend. But anyway, anybody who's public, basically, that's on TV or in media, you know, I think that them marrying white women, I think for black women, it tends to make them think that that is the large majority of black men. I don't think that's the case. I could be wrong, but I think maybe there should be a real genuine study to find out where black men stand on that, because Nellie Fuller goes into about racial showcasing, the people that you see on TV might not necessarily represent you know, the larger masses of black men. So I would say to you, you know, just keep doing your thing. If you internally, you know, you continue to develop that self-love, which you express through your hair and other means, you continue to do that, you will start to bring and gravitate towards you, you know, people in your life, not just brothers, but sisters as well, who can align with your energy and understand you want a deeper playing field. So don't even worry about it. You know, he wasn't right for you. And I know it's not easy, but I do have faith, and I think you should too, that things will work out as you continue to develop love for yourself.
No, I definitely appreciate that. And actually, like, just listening to the show, it's definitely a breath of fresh air that, you know, there are, like you said, there are still men out there who will love somebody for what they naturally are. And, like, recently I remember looking up a story about Little Kim, and it really saddened me, and I would never want to get to that point in my life. But I remember when I was younger, and I was also around like a lot of different white people, especially like early elementary through middle school, and I would be there would be like four classes, and I might be the only black girl in out of the whole four classes. And even like younger, I remember wishing that I was white, because I guess, like you said, it's just like it's there from a young age. And just thinking back on it now, and I just really feel bad, because it's not, I feel bad that I guess I was not taught, or of course I didn't know what I know now. It's definitely about all the brainwashing.
This is Paradox. Let me say this too, because T, you did mention something about, I know we touched on a couple of celebrities, and I was thinking that even though, and again, I'm not an expert, even though there might be, or obviously there might be, obviously black people together in the majority, I think that we are mostly mainstream. We are mostly assimilated into this civilization, so can't really deny that. But I think that when we're seeing our, I think, and I definitely think about Dr. Welsing a lot in this statement. But I think when we're looking at the highest forms of what we're thinking is what we all believe is greatness. So you look at your greatest warriors, your greatest athletes, or your greatest thinkers, or your greatest scientists, and we put them on we put them on pedestals, I think. And I think that, so if, even if it's one person, but they magnify a million fold, I think that that's why I think it's such a powerful image, that they would have to be much more conscious, because we're going to automatically, I think, qualify them for leadership. Even right or wrong, it doesn't really matter. I think that if the television, the internet, or even people in your family, the pastors of your churches, etc., when they do things, it magnifies, I think, a lot more than just the average person that you see every day. And so those things, I think, more or less stick with you. Because the reason why I make that point is that when I think about my family and friends that I know, they're, for the most part, everybody's with another black person, but that almost gets washed away because when I look at someone very, very famous that everyone appears to love, they might be with someone who's non-black. So I just think that part of it, from a psychological perspective, is fascinating how it can impact so many people. Because I have made a point with a buddy of mine that if we went to look at everyone that millionaire athletes, just to use them as an example, married or black businessmen marry, you might find that even in sports, the majority of them might be with black women. But the television, the newspapers, the magazines, etc., tend to isolate certain groups, or not even that they isolate particular pairings of people, but because of how we've been conditioned, we're seeking that. You know, we're looking for, and that could be historical, obviously. A lot of that I think is historical when it comes to media, especially in television, as far as putting so-called light-skinned people on television. I don't want to go down that road, but I think that, and the reason I make a point about that, I was thinking about just LeBron James in my mind, or Denzel Washington, but for some reason, because they're with like people, you know, their other half is, you know, is a black woman. And I'm just thinking, and the way my mind is set up, I'm just thinking that that's not going to highlight itself. It's almost going to bury itself. But if you take a person like a LeBron James, who, you know, millions of people are going to see all over the planet, you know, he had a different female with him. I have a strange feeling that it'll be in the news a lot more. I do know that us as a group, we do have not all of us, but at least from a social media perspective, I think that when we see people who are not brown or dark skinned, we do get an emotional response. And again, I do not want to go down that. I don't want, just so you know, DC, I don't want to go down that. I want to stick to where we are with feminism. I don't want to run down that road about the color.
Stay codified.
Stay
codified.
Yes.
All right. Hey,
stay on task.
Yeah. So we got some real important information from the owner of this network, Mr. Scotty. We would like to share some information with us to kind of give us a little bit more clarity on that demographic. All right, Mr. Reed.
Yes. According to blackdemographics.com, 86% of black men have a black wife, and 94% of black women have a black husband, and those stats are reported as being as recent as 2014, and it is from the U.S. Census Bureau.
And once again, I think that what ends up happening is media has a lot to do with this. So the perception is that black men are always pretty much dating outside, and that now there tends to be this propagation of showing black women now go ahead and dating outside of the race also, which they're pushing this, and it's basically having an effect on both genders. So then you get this clash of people that are basically discussing their grievances out in the open, and it's all due to their personal experiences, and then they're extrapolating it on the whole. So whatever your experience is, good or bad, you're basically regurgitating it out. And this kind of goes back to the topic that we was discussing, and the reason why I wanted to bring up intersectionality is because with that term works both ways. It works for black women extremely. It is basically self-explanatory. There are all different types of pressures that are happening to black women, you guys. But also on the other side of that, just like you had shared your experience about growing up and everything was reinforced with white femininity from a very, very young age. As T was illustrating, that had an effect on your male counterpart also, which once y'all interact, right, you're basically having the same system react to you differently. So when you interact, you know, romantically or, you know, in discourse, then there's going to be things said from both sides that's going to be a little bit sensitive. You know, like when I was younger, you know, the black girls that I liked a lot, would tease me. You're too dark. You got big lips. Your eyelids are funny, or you know, something to that effect, where it made me feel some kind of way. Or you know, your hair is too nappy, or you know, you look this way. You're too big. You're too. I mean, there are different things that are going on due to the system. So we are getting programmed that blue eyes is the standard, or whatever, whiteness is the standard. This is what is considered beautiful. Then everything detracts from there. So that's how we're having this intersectionality conversation, where things are basically running into each other. But it's not just the black women that are experiencing this. It is your counterpart also. So the damage that is done to you, as far as perming the hair, feeling like you got to put contacts in, the even to the butt injections, or making yourself more attractive to, you know, get male attention, then it also happens with males saying something like, all I want is a red bone in these raps, or something to that effect, or saying things that are incorrect, and then excluding other black women that are beautiful and also attractive, that you want have, to feel on it.
You have another caller. If I'm not mistaken, this may be the previous caller. But if I may say something about those statistics I just read.
Yes, sir.
And I acknowledge.
You can put it through, by the way, once you get done.
Yes, I acknowledge all of the media programming, which T started it off talking about. Up to 12 years old, he was programmed. And this is literal. These aren't metaphors. I don't look at them as him using a metaphor, or anyone who's used that example. That is for real. That's a real thing. They are programming you. But those statistics that show that 84%, this is according to blackdemographics.com from the U.S. Census Bureau, it's their source, in 2014, so that was just 2 years ago. So 86%, despite all this, gives me hope. Despite all that programming, still 80% of black men chose a black woman. And again, they getting hit with the same programming. I see
there's a lot of pain, though. There's a lot of pain between us, though. Yes. Even though we're marrying each other, though. Yeah, yes. There's still a lot of pain.
Yes, so where is that pain coming from? Is it real, or is it based on a false reality the media has created, just absolutely, like a matrix?
Absolutely.
So when we look at the facts, I feel good about that. I feel good about the chances of my daughters marrying black men. So the caller is area code 407. Your mic is open. Thanks for allowing me to share.
No problem, indeed.
Hi, guys.
Hey, welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back.
You were making brilliant points. I love T's point. I love everyone's points, and I agree with them. If you don't mind, I just want to make two more little points, and I guess it's kind of to tie into the discussion. Me personally, I don't believe in feminism, because I believe what it does is it encourages separatism and it brings about negativity. If you tried to tell a feminist that she shouldn't be feminist, she should worry about other things, worry about black issues, I mean, she has a real problem with it. And it's sad, because I think what we should be focusing on truly is the black family. I think feminism is the European woman's war. It's her war. That's her fighting to be equal in the eyes of her European man. From we were in Africa, we were seen as equal. The woman was placed on a pedestal, or is probably in some cultures that maybe have remained intact. We were seen as equal. I feel like in America, we're not, as black women, we're not seen as much of a threat. We aren't. In our work life, it's the black male that's seen as more of a threat than us. We're always seen as the lesser than. That's why, you know, I think we're targeted. The black men are targeted more, because they're seen as more of a threat. So I don't know why we've taken on that battle. I mean, in the meantime, while we're screaming and saying that we want equal rights to men, our men are being placed in the penal system. Our men are being destroyed. And even now, we are being destroyed. You know, so I feel like that shouldn't even exist. Feminism shouldn't even be a word that we use. That's somebody else's war. That's for them to fight. Our fight should be the black family. And when you think about it also, in terms of intersectionality,
I was thinking about like some of the things that affect us. I know you guys are all aware of them, but I'm just going to say it just to make my point. Like, we have Planned Parenthood that attacks black babies before they're even born. We got germ warfare, things like Zika. We have drugs. We have wars. We have our men becoming effeminate, and that could be from vaccinations that cause autism and probably homosexuality, something that didn't even exist in African times. It just didn't exist. There's no record of it. Our laws, the economics to keep us poor, politicians to keep us poor, and of course the media, which is the worst, because we watch so much TV, we watch more TV than most people, and that is constantly bringing those images. It's propaganda, it's encouragement for us to mix and create, quote, mulattoes that weaken us as a race of people. And when you think about those things, I mean, to me, that's a war. Because you could use any one of those elements to wipe out a people, to weaken a people, to weaken a race. And out of those things, I think, comes pathologies. That's why you have us not being respected or us not being loved for our natural beauty. Out of that comes, we were the original mark of beauty. From way back when, we were the first people on the planet. And from us, I believe, all groups of people have come from. I don't think God created the Chinese man, the Indian man. I don't think he created them first. I think he created the African man first. And from us came everybody else. So we were the original mark of beauty. If you look on the internet now, you can put beautiful woman on the internet, and it brings up a bunch of white women and a bunch with a bunch of Eurocentric features. That's a lie. That's propaganda. It's crazy. It really is. It's sad. So I think feminism should exist. It shouldn't exist. And I think the fact that our men don't appreciate us, some of us don't, some of them don't or don't see our beauty, don't even see the beauty within themselves. I think that's because of the pathologies that have existed because of intersectionality and all those things that affect us. We so much affects us. Oh my God, you're talking about intersections. We have a weave of intersections. We have tons and tons of intersections that affect us. So many issues because we're being targeted, and targeted, I believe, for elimination in any shape or form they could do it, either to weaken us or to eliminate us. And that's it, guys. We won't take up any more of your time. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. No, thank you once again. You know, we this has basically turned this program, and I hope that people that are listening to the program get further enlightenment from it. Paradox, you had anything that you wanted to share?
No, I'll just say a couple of things. Reading is more important than watching TV. Gus T. Renegade. And like Dr. Welsing said, we are the parent people on the planet. So I definitely just wanted to get that out there. You know, that's one of my favorite things that she said, just to remind me to hug my black self, to love my black self. So, Just tell just my quick thoughts. I think that I will push back a little bit on the caller on the feminist part, as far as I'm thinking that there is a group of black women who are trying to separate out. I think that's why they're labeling it black feminists, and I think that's why they're introducing intersectionality, because, and again, I don't know, but maybe feminism is flawed because, as the caller stated, maybe that's a white woman's fight with her man and her civilization. And so, it's just interesting. I'm gonna think a lot more on it before I say too much about it. But I think at some point, as it gets, as black feminism or intersectionality gets refined in the academic space, and maybe I'm missing it, but I'm going to say it's going to probably include family, if it doesn't already, as far as when you get deeper into the details of it, or if you're speaking directly with a feminist or an academic feminist, I'll say it that way, who can shed more light on how does the black man and the black children line up under that concept. So.
All right, so we just make sure that we can kind of get all the callers that we can get. We do have another caller from the 701 area code. Please introduce yourself or however you want to be called, what name you want to go by, and you can go ahead and share your thoughts.
Yes, hello, how are you? Wonderful program.
Greetings, greetings, greetings.
The women that called. This is, you know, a very touchy subject, and I've been working on this. What we need is a deprogramming system. And I've been trying to figure out how to do this. I try to do it with my artwork. But before getting into that, I want to bring this up. If you go back, like there was some pictures in the New Yorker magazine and the Jim Crow caricatures, you'll see they always depicted the white female. And the thing is, the white females don't even look like that. But they always depicted them as being these grand, well-dressed, and all megot. You know, it's ridiculous when you look at the pictures. And then they'll show you the pictures of black women. They always look dirty and deformed, with gruesome faces and their hair all sticking out all bad. You know, look at, they purposely did this because, as we know, imagery is everything. Heck with the words. Imagery is the most important thing. If you want to brainwash somebody, you use imagery. That's what television is for. That's what movies are for. That's what videos are for. Every type of media, the basic thing, the most important thing is the imagery. And like Scotty was saying, the psychological warfare, that started way back then. Think about Willie Lynch. Think about who was attacked. You were supposed to attack the woman. They made sure you attack the female because she gives birth. And she'll teach her children, that's what, remember, she supposedly, she, because she saw her child, her black boys, slaughtered in front of her, that's what the plan was. She taught them to be fearful and obedient, to be good slaves. But what? But also remember what the effect that she that would have on her daughters. There's even old pictures showing white males chasing black women and their children through the street, beating them. There's all these old pictures. You can find them. They're in the Smithsonian, and, you know, they're on record. And so there needs to be a deprogramming, because the same thing is with the self-hatred. If you attack the woman, that's all you have to do for genocide, is attack the woman, because she is the child there. But here's the other side of that coin. There's the saying, the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. That's a very deep statement. If you listen, if you really pay attention to what's being said, because the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world means because that's who is teaching that child. And so they know this, and they're using this. And so the psychological warfare that they have, black women have been taught to hate themselves. It systematically goes all the way back. You can trace it back. You can look at these pictures. It didn't affect everyone, of course, but it's a large chunk of people. And so then, that's what we have come to. And as far as black men now, I truly believe that the so-called celebrities have been told to go with white females. I have met a lot of black males. It's interesting. A lot of them will be, well, not a lot, but the ones I know that go with white females, one of the first things they do is always try to get sex with a black woman. They'll sneak out and go somewhere or go downtown or something, and I'm like, oh, isn't this interesting? And, right. and they're always hostile, and they don't even want to speak to you. And, you know, and they have this look on your face. I'll be with my husband. They'll speak to him, but they won't speak to me. And this look of hatred, I'm saying, no, that's not directed so much as me. They must be having a hateful, miserable life. And I know this, and also, I've noticed, and like I was saying, I really do think that the celebrities are told to do this. I'll give you an example why. I mean, if you think about how it's set up and how the system is set up, they're told what to do. Even if they come on a program, they're even told what to say. That they only can do so much. It doesn't matter how much money. Look at Oprah. Oprah has all this money. Oprah can't do much with that money. She can still go places and they don't let her in. And so these celebrities, and I'll give you an example, Kanye West. Kanye West, now, I have no problems. Women should do whatever they want to do sexually. I don't feel that there should be holes on that. But Kanye West, when you turn on, everybody is laughing at him and talking about they are going, he married a white female, even though it's questionable about just how white she is. but for, you know, white people now are calling everybody white. You know, everybody white who has light skin or who they, you know, just so they can sort of make themselves look even a little better. But he marries a woman who everyone says went with every black man. Now, we know ego. Kanye got an ego like crazy. But think of this. Who doesn't in that field have a big ego? If you usually want someone on your arm who is not totally white or someone who you're very proud of. Kanye West married a female who black men laugh and say she went Professor Griff and all of them talking about she screwed everybody. Now that's a prerogative to screw everybody, but I found it interesting he was engaged to a black woman, and now he, out the clear blue sky, he marries her. But I think the reason he did that, they told him to do that, or else because he used to stand up for black women. He went on stage and stood up for Beyonce, not winning, and she should have won. He went on stage, he made statements, what's her name? The one that he said should not have gotten the award. And remember, he went into hiding after that. He went into hiding. And I think they gave him an ultimatum about his career and about anything else. But I noticed afterwards, and I noticed this, Kanye West, all of a sudden, that album came out, and he had a white female, some grotesque white female figure without a head. Remember that album that came up, and she's sitting on there having sex? He came out with that right after that, when he came back into public view. Then afterwards, in Vogue magazine, Kanye West was sitting in a chair. He was in they were talking about whatever, he's having this clothing line. Now, there was two other white men sitting in the other chairs, and there was all these white models. Kanye has a white model who is so white. I mean, it's unbelievable how white her skin was. She's sitting in his lap. Another white female is sitting on the arm of the chair. There's other white models sitting on the arms. There's one black model, Joan Small, who's sitting on the floor. And I said, uh-huh. That was the follow-up. And when I first saw the album, I said, wait a minute. Come on. And then when I saw that, I said, of course. And then the next thing I know, he's running around with Kim Kardashian. And I don't even know, because people told me I don't even watch that. But to something as silly as Kanye West's ego, and something as silly and ridiculous looking as a reality TV show. And so I think these celebrities are told to be with white females, and I think the sports people are too. And I think they're told to do this, or else something's going to happen to your career. If you try to do anything that's positive, a positive image for black people, look at Wesley Snipes, that get you on some tax charges because what he set up, he was teaching black children martial arts, mental and spiritually, not just physically. Oh, hell no. You weren't supposed to do that. And think of all the other people that have been penalized. So I'm just saying, I think that we need to find a deprogramming system. A deprogramming system, because when you have black women who are running around with these weaves, and now what? Beyonce is this role model who wears all this blonde weave? That's one reason why white people have put her up front. The reason Beyonce and Rihanna and all them, not saying they don't have talent, but that's because of what? They're a walking billboard. They're a walking billboard of white supremacy, even with the contact lenses. And so when you have little girls who see this and they grow up to be big grown women, then they have children, and what do you think? The black boys are taught to go to white girls. The black girls are taught to want to look like white girls. And right. So that, you know, that's just, and it just goes on and on. I teach in schools. It almost makes me cry when little black girls talk about how dark they are. They don't like their hair. They don't like their lips. They too dark. They want to be pink. You know, this is some nonsense. And one little black girl, the other girl didn't like her. Okay, she her family didn't have much money. She wore bunny clothes. Her mother didn't take the time to come here. Do you know that little black girl next day walked in with a weave down to her butt and everybody gave her attention? And the children are so brainwashed that when I didn't compliment the girl, I was accused of being a racist. But like, I'm a racist because I didn't like her weave, and I said, what's wrong with your own hair? They're so tough. Oh, you're a racist. But I don't know if it happened in your states, but I had noticed in different states on the black radio shows that certain people, especially certain ages, listen to, they're always saying, are you prejudiced? Don't be prejudiced. But they don't do it on the white. They never tell anybody, white, don't be prejudiced if you turn on the radio. And so they've been brainwashing these children. I thought they told me they didn't even want to hear this black stuff. They want
Thank
white
you.
Stuff.
Thank you so much for
yes.
sharing.
Yes.
You came and I mean knocked it out of the park, and you know, our program is about to come to a close, so I would like to get like final thoughts from the callers that's on the line. So I'd like to go ahead and get the final thoughts from the female callers, and we're running up against it, so we got about
Let's go
around,
with,
like, 5 minutes to go.
Let me help you out. 702. Did you have any final thoughts?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, my final thought is that just once again, I definitely appreciate you all taking the time out to do the show, because I know, like, with my life and even some other black females around me, I feel like we definitely do get discouraged and definitely don't feel as appreciated or even feel loved. So just this small gesture, it definitely makes a big impact on me, and I'll definitely make sure I mention it to the episode to my friend. So thank you.
Thank you.
407.
Hi, that'd be me. I'm C. I think we're the most beautiful people on the planet, and I think that we can solve our own problems with our minds together. We can do it. We can solve it. There's nothing we can do. We created the world, and everything in it, every progress is made is based on us. So we can definitely figure it out. We can do this, guys. We got to love ourselves, though. Thank you.
Hey. Is T, you still on? Do you have anything else you want to say?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and add on real quick. I think it's interesting that the inventor of intersectionality, and forgive me, I can't recall her name, but she says that it's outside of feminism, and I think if we apply that same ideology, I think today we've arrived at the conclusion that we all have intersecting lanes that that we all can share and heal from.
All right. Well, you can reach us on Twitter at Codebreakers 191. You can also find us on Instagram at code_breakers 1865. And if you have any other comments, you can email us at codebreakers 1999@gmail.com. You can also find us on Black Talk Radio, as well as a podcast on Stitcher, I think TuneIn and iTunes as well. I just want to plug that real quick. We definitely always appreciate Scotty Reed and him allowing us to be on the network. D, did you have anything?
No, that's pretty much it. I'd like to thank all the female callers for coming on and sharing your much needed analysis and thoughts. Thank you for calling. Please remember, this is a safe space. Hopefully you will share the program with anybody else that you think that it would be constructive to share it with. And hopefully we was able to give you a little insight from a black male perspective, from a little bit more of a conscious perspective, as far as how the system works and how basically we're in this together. And we want to ensure that on this program, that me, Paradox, and T are trying to do here, we want to make sure that you guys know that this is a safe space to always be able to share your thoughts and views. We may not agree on everything, but we are a family, we are together, and for us to basically come against this system, we have to do it together. So those are my final thoughts. If anybody else has anything to say, I think we probably out of time. Mr. Reed, did you have anything that you wanted to kind of share before closing us out?
No, not really, except to say it's been a very constructive program, in my opinion.
All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate all the hard work that you do behind the boards, behind the scenes. Thanks for getting us straight in the time. And we are the Code Breakers. I am D.
This is Paradox.
And T, you going to introduce yourself, brother? All right. Until next time, we are the Code Breakers. Until next time.